Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Brush Country. Performed by Terrence Asel Ford, Thomas Keegan, Yasmin Toison, Scott McCormick, Joe Brack, Drew Kopus, Michael Glenn, Casey Platt, Richard Rowan, Tim Carlin, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Eric Messner, Colleen Delaney, and Mort Shelby. Brush Country Part 2, Llano River. Some men seem blessed with a jovial nature, an even humor that lets them take reversal and insult in stride without losing their smile or clenching a fist. Dundee was not one of these. His temper was like a hammer cocked back over 40 grains of black powder. The echo racketed for miles when old man Faraday brought a new son-in-law out to the ranch and handed him Dundee's job as foreman. A man with any self-respect couldn't just stand there like a sheep and abjectly accept demotion to cowhand that way. So, after the discussion was over, Dundee painfully rubbed his bruised knuckles and asked for his time. He had stopped in a ragtag shipping pen settlement later to wash away the indignities and suffered one more. Most of his payoff money was lost over a whiskey-splashed card table.
Damn old man Faraday and his flat-chested daughter and his ignorant new son-in-law anyway.
He had no clear idea where he was riding to. In the Texas free-range days of the 1880s, a man seeking fresh grass usually drifted in a westerly direction. He might veer a little northward or southward, but the main direction was always west. That was where the new was, where a man could cut a fresh deck and hope for a new deal all around. Dundee had ridden several days. Now darkness was about to catch him as his half-thoroughbred bay splashed across a narrow creek toward a dusty little cow town which the sign said was Titusville. His outlook hadn't improved much as the bay had slowly put the long miles behind him. Dundee was tired, hungry, near broke, and ringy enough to do barehanded battle with a bobcat. The two-rut wagon road widened into a many-rutted street. At the head of it, Dundee passed a set of horse corrals and a big barn that said Titus Livery. He thought how much the bay would like a clean stall and a good bait of oats. A little way down the hoof-softened street, he saw a thin little man lighting a lantern on the front gallery of a long frame building. The sign by the front door said Titus Hotel. Dundee looked with appreciation at the deep, narrow windows and imagined how soft the mattresses were, how pleasant must be the bright colors of the wallpaper. But he knew that the few coins left in his pocket meant that after a drink and a meal, he'd retrace his steps down to the creek bank, stake the bay on grass, and stretch his own frame on a blanket, looking up at stars instead of wallpaper.
Slim pickings.
Sure enough, but there wasn't any use a man biting himself like a stirred-up rattler. If he was strong, he took the hand which was dealt him and played it through, even when it was all jokers. Tomorrow he'd scout around and try to find him a ranch job. Tonight...
Hell with it.
He saw the words Titus Mercantile on one big false-fronted building and Titus Saloon on another.
Ain't there nobody here but Titus?
Across the street lay a narrow, deep building which he took to be a second saloon, and he angled the bay toward it. On the porch, a lanky man sat rocked back in a rawhide chair, balanced against the clapboard wall. The sign over his head read, Texas Bar. Since it didn't say anything about Titus, Dundee decided to give the place a try. He stepped off of the horse and dropped the reins through a ring in the cedar post, taking a hitch to be sure the bay didn't get a fool notion to wander off in search of Titus, whoever the Sam Hill that was. He stretched himself and dusted his felt hat across his leg, raising a small cloud. He glanced at the stubbled old timer in the chair and found the man sitting motionless, watching him.
Evening.
Evening.
The tail of his eye caught a movement, and he turned. From around the side of the building, three young men came ambling along as if they had all night to do whatever it might be they had in mind.
Cowboys.
Boil them all down and you wouldn't have 50 cents worth of tallow or anything else. They paused at the edge of the low porch and eyed Dundee like they were appraising a bronc at a first Monday horse sale. One of them looked at the bay.
Is that your horse, friend?
I ain't had a friend since a year ago last March. And you just try riding him off. You'll find out right quick whose horse he is.
His voice was rougher than he meant it to be. He saw a flash of anger in the young cowboy's eyes, and it occurred to him that he'd cut the young man off a little quick. But when a man asks a foolish question, he ought to expect an answer in kind. He went into the saloon and leaned his elbows heavily on the dark-stained bar.
A drink.
Dundee glanced at his own scowling face in the cracked mirror behind the bar and quickly looked away, for he didn't like what he saw. Even as a baby, he hadn't been called pretty by anybody but his mother, and 30 years hadn't improved the situation. Right now, he looked 40, face dusty and bewhiskered, brown eyes hostile, when deep down he knew he didn't have anybody to be mad at, really, except old man Faraday, who was a long way behind him. The heavy-jowled bartender studied him as if trying to decide whether Dundee could pay.
Good whiskey or cheap whiskey?
It better not cost much. I'm almost as broke as I look.
That don't leave a man but little choice.
The bartender brought up a plain bottle from beneath the bar.
The quality ain't much, but it sure does carry authority.
Dundee cut a hard glance at the bartender, but he couldn't say he'd been lied to. He poured himself a second glass and lifted it.
Here's the truth.
I told you the truth.
That is purely a fact.
Judging by the sounds, it struck him that that crazy cowboy just might be taking him up on his dare. In three long strides, he reached the door and stopped. One cowboy was holding the bay's reins up close to the bit, trying to make the horse stand still. Behind, a second cowboy had hold of the bay's tail, stretching it taut. The third, the one who'd asked the question, was using a pocket knife in an attempt to bob the tail off short. Dundee left the porch like a firebrand flung in fury. He barreled into the man who was holding the horse's tail and sent him staggering. The cowboy with the knife stared in disbelief at the speed of Dundee's fist streaking toward his eyes. The third man turned loose of the reins and trudged forward, his fists up in a bare-knuckle boxer stance. Dundee didn't know the rules. He just went under and caught him in the belly. The first cowboy charged back into the fray. Dundee turned to meet him, his fists doubled hard as a sledge. All of a sudden to Dundee, this wasn't just any cowboy. It was old man Faraday, young enough to hit. In a moment, the cowboy was on the ground, out of it. Only the pocket knife man was left. His nose was bleeding, his eyes wild, and somehow he looked a little like old man Faraday's son-in-law. Dundee gathered the pent-up anger of many days and delivered it into the cowboy's ribs. The cowboy didn't stop coming. His fists swung awkwardly, trying for any kind of contact he could make. Dundee fetched him a hard lick on the chin and another in the belly. They hurt, he could tell. But the cowboy stayed. He got his arms around Dundee and wrestled until Dundee lost his footing. Falling, Dundee managed to twist so that the cowboy didn't land on top of him. The instant he hit the dirt, he was pushing himself up again. He dropped the cowboy onto his back and straddled him, grabbing at the swinging fists.
Boy, you better give up. I got you by the shoulder.
Raging, the cowboy continued his struggle. Somehow now, he didn't look quite so much like Faraday's son-in-law, who hadn't fought this hard. But Dundee thought of the pocket knife and the bay horse's tail, and his conscience didn't twinge as he swung at the jutting jaw.
Boy, I tell you, I'm fixing to get out of sorts with you.
The struggling went on, so Dundee fetched him another lick. The old man on the porch slowly let his chair come away from the wall and pushed himself to his feet. He looked down calmly at the cowboy pinned to the ground.
Son Titus, I believe you caused this stranger trouble enough. You better let him go.
The cowboy twisted and fought beneath Dundee's weight.
Son Titus, you get up and leave that stranger alone.
All right, Pa, but I could have whipped him.
The day we have 6 inches of snow here in July, maybe you can whip him. Get up from there and dust yourself off.
Dundee pushed away from the cowboy, but kept his fists clenched. That crazy button might decide to try just one more spin of the wheel. Dundee's knuckles were bruised. He couldn't rightly remember when he'd had so satisfying a little fight. The young cowboy's face was red smeared. From his eyes, Dundee judged he hadn't had quite enough yet.
Son Titus, go wash yourself.
Son Titus turned away, looking back over his shoulder at Dundee. The look spoke of things unfinished and things to come. The other two cowboys got shakily to their feet, but they didn't seem much inclined to continue what they'd started. Dundee turned back to check his horse. Wonder the bay hadn't jerked loose and run off, all that scuffling going on around him. Dundee patted the horse reassuringly. He took hold of the tail, stretching it out to see how much damage the cowboy had done, while at the same time he warily watched the bay's hind feet. It would be just like a horse to kick now that the trouble was over. He couldn't see that they'd cut much hair.
Dull boy, dull knife.
Stranger, I apologize for my boy. He was just by way of having a little fun.
Wasn't very funny to my horse.
Little town like this, there ain't much for a young man to do to entertain himself. So it's natural they turn their hand to mischief when they see a stranger. Hope they didn't spoil the looks of your horse.
They didn't, but it's no thanks to you. You sat right there and let them do it.
I was curious to see if I judged you right.
Well, did you?
Sized you up when you first come. You did just about what I expected you would. A little quicker, even. Nice job you done on them three buttons.
If one of them was your son, you'd take it awful calm.
Does a boy good to get himself whipped once in a while. Teaches him humility. Come on back in. I'll stand you to a drink.
The heavy-jawed barkeep with the smiling mustache reached beneath the bar and came up with a bottle that looked better than the one Dundee had tried. He poured two glasses.
I didn't hear your name.
No, I don't reckon you did.
It's none of my business, but I gotta call you something.
Dundee will do. My answer to that.
I doubt that you answer to anybody. I'm John Titus.
I gathered that when the boy called you Pa. You the Titus that owns everything in town?
Most of it. Which way did you ride in from?
Northeast.
You've been on my ranch the last 25 miles.
You don't look like a big rancher.
You mean to my clothes? Hell, everybody here knows me. I don't have to impress anybody.
You dress up different when you go away from home?
Why should I? Nobody would know me anyhow.
Dundee mulled that over a while and finished his drink. He glanced at the big barkeep and back at Titus.
This saloon ain't got your name on it. How come you're in here buying whiskey from the competition?
It's better than the kind I sell. Anyhow, the people who work in my saloon wear the knees out of their britches trying to please me. I get tired of being mistered all over the place. Badger here? He's so independent that even his mother hates him. I like a man who's a little contrary. Shows he's got character. You're a contrary man, Dundee?
Dundee didn't reply, for this was no news to him. He'd been only about 14 when his brothers had decided they couldn't stand him anymore. They had ganged up and run him off from home. Titus picked up the bottle and his glass and carried it to a small round table. Dundee followed suit.
You look tired. I hope you're figuring on spending the night in my hotel.
I expect I'll sleep out on the creek bank.
That's what I thought. Broke, ain't you?
What gives you that kind of a notion?
The look of you. It's all over you, like dark skin on a Comanche. Anyway, you're a cowboy. Cowboys are stone broke 9/10 of the time.
I won't go hungry.
You don't have to. You need a job, I need a man. I bet we could work up a deal. I seen a carbine on your saddle. You know how to use it, I expect?
I generally hit what I aim at.
How about a pistol?
Got one in my saddlebag. Always liked the carbine better.
Ever hire your guns out?
You got somebody you want killed, you just go and shoot him yourself. I do honest work.
I'm sure you do, Dundee. What I had in mind would be honest. I wouldn't lie to you, though. It's so damn honest, it could get you killed.
How's that?
Where I want you to go, honest men are as rare as fresh peaches in January. They're in open season the year round.
If somebody was to shoot me, I don't see where that money of yours would do me any good.
I got a notion you can take care of yourself. Anyway, man, think of the challenge.
I'm not a schoolboy. A challenge don't stir me anymore.
But I'll bet money does.
You got the money, I got the time. As long as your whiskey holds out, I'll at least listen. What's your problem?
Cow thieves, hide burners. They're after me like heel flies after an old bull. I need them stopped.
Why don't you just call in the Texas Rangers? That's their line of work.
It's my cattle. I'll pay for my own remedies. Man runs to the government with all his troubles. It's a sign of weakness. When I itch, I scratch for myself.
How come you think I'm the man to do it for you? You don't know me. For all you know, I could be a cow thief. For all I know, I could be one if the profit looked big enough.
You're not one of that kind. Some people are easy to read the minute you set eyes on them. I got a strong notion that you could go down into that den of snakes and bite as hard as they do.
Where is this snake den?
You ever been down in the Llano River country, south of here?
Nope.
It's rough country, lots of brush and timber. A regular outlaw paradise. They even got a town of their own, if you call it a town. A place by the name of Runaway. Ever hear of it?
Never heard of Titusville till I rode in here.
Runaway's not on any map. It's just down there like a boil on a man's backside. It's outside of this county. Local sheriff's got no jurisdiction down there. And what's more, he don't want any. Runaway's a far piece from its own county seat, and they don't even keep a deputy there. Bad climate. Hard on your health.
Looks like the thing to do is just to hire you a couple of 36 gunslingers. Go down there and clean house. Be done with it once and for all.
I will, but I got to go about it right. Old days, a man could just go down and throw a nice big hanging party and burn the damn place and be shed of it. And no questions asked. But now, people have got awful righteous about things like that. They get upset and call for investigations and such. Cause a heap of bother. Anyway, I'm not a hard man, Dundee. There's some good people down there. A few, at least. And I don't want to have to hurt them all just to get at the heel flies. Trouble is, I don't know just who's doing the stealing. That'd be one of the things I'd want you to find out. Once I know the guilty ones, I'll get me some men and go down there and throw one hell of a good party.
Dundee's opinion of Titus was slowly on the rise. Some cowman he knew would simply ride down on such a town like a cyclone, sweep it clean, and tell God they'd all just died.
Titus, you're a wealthy man. A few cow thieves won't break you.
No? You've heard the old saying, the bigger a man is, the harder he goes down. I got debts, Dundee. Debts that would scare old Jim Fisk himself. The cattle I'm losing could be the difference between me hanging on and going under. I gotta stop the leaks, and I will. I want to do it the right way. Get the people who are hurting me and leave the innocent folks alone. But if I wind up with my back to the wall, I'll take desperate measures. I will go down there and wipe the whole slate clean. When a man comes up to the snubbing post, he's got to save himself.
What about the innocent ones?
I expect there was a few good people in Jericho, Dundee. But when Joshua blew that trumpet, they all went down.
Dundee shrugged. There wasn't any skin off of his nose one way or the other. But he had a feeling he could get to like this Titus if he stayed around. Dundee liked contrary men, too.
You asked me if I'd ever hired out my guns. I have, but only when I liked the deal.
I'm not asking you to go down there and kill out all them varmints. I'm not asking you to kill anybody, unless there comes a need for it. I just want you to go find out who's running off my stock. I'll handle it from there. I'll pay you more than you could make in 2 years if you was to try and earn a cowboy, eh?
Dundee thought about Titus's hotel, and the beds in it, and the colored wallpaper.
How much in advance?
Say, $200? The balance when you get back.
What if I don't get back?
Then I save the rest of the money. I'll be square with you, Dundee. I've sent two men down there already. One of them acted like a broke cowpuncher riding the chuck line. Figured that would give him a chance to see a lot. They dumped his body in the street here one night right in front of my hotel. The other one went down there acting like a cattle buyer. I never did see him again.
Dundee reached for the bottle, then changed his mind. He could already feel a glow starting. If he was going to dicker on a deal, he didn't want any cobwebs on his brain.
Saying I was to decide to go down there. I don't intend to do it acting like somebody I ain't. Been times in my life I ain't told all there was to the story, but there's never been a time I ever out and out lied about anything. I won't make any big point of it, but if anybody asks me, my name is Dundee and I'm working for you. No lies, no play acting.
How you do it is up to you. I just want to be damn sure it gets done.
Son Titus stepped through the door. He had washed the blood from his face and dusted his clothes a little. But around one eye, a blue spot the size of a half dollar was beginning to show up. And one cheek was skinned down to the color of calf meat. Dundee nodded in satisfaction. It had always pleased him to see a job well done.
Pa! What are you talking to this drifter about?
Nothing that's any concern of yours. Go find yourself something to do, and this time leave the knife in your pocket.
There ain't nothing to do, Pa, and you know it. You don't allow no high-stepping women in Titusville, or no high-limit poker games. Anyhow, I wouldn't ask you if I didn't want to know. What are you getting mixed up with this stranger for?
Hiring him for a little job of work is all. Go play marbles or something.
Dundee judged Son Titus to be about 21 or 2, somewhat beyond the age for marbles.
I heard a little of it from the porch. You're sending him to Runaway, ain't you? You think maybe he's gonna catch them cow thieves? He won't. He'll take whatever you give him, then go down there and join up with them. That is, if that's not where he comes from in the first place. I can tell by the look of him. I'll bet you $1 million he's a cow thief himself.
Dundee slowly got to his feet. He clenched a fist, wincing as pain lanced through a battered knuckle.
Boy, if you keep working at it, you're finally gonna make me take a disliking to you.
Son Titus, you get along out of here. You haven't got $1 million, and you never will. You haven't got much sense sometimes either.
I got sense enough to take care of that runaway job for you, if you'd let me. You don't have to go hiring some drifter.
Son Titus! If you don't want to spend all this summer round up jingling horses and holding the cut, you better do what I tell you.
Son Titus turned and walked out. He paused on the porch, looking back, his eyes hot with resentment.
He's contrary. I reckon that's why I like him.
Only a father could. And maybe a mother. If I was to take this job, you got any ideas where I ought to start at?
I'll give you the names of some people I think are honest. And I'll tell you about a few of the other kind. Main name to begin with, I think, is Old Blue Roan.
What kind of a name is that?
It's the name of a cow thief. The daddy of them all. Smart as a Mustang, mean as a one-eyed polecat. Whatever you find down there, I expect Old Roan Hardesty is at the center of it.
Sounds like you know him.
I do. Long time ago, down in deep south Texas, him and me used to steal cattle together. Hell yes, I used to steal cattle. How else do you think I got my start? We all did them days. But I reformed. Blue Roan never did. Well, how about it, Dundee? You want to take the job?
The bed's in that hotel of yours. Ain't good and soft?
In the 1880s, much of the Texas Hill Country, which shed its waters into the Llano River and down into the Frio and the Nueces, was known far and wide as thieves' territory, for it was a big land of high, rough hills, rocky ranges, of deep valleys and heavy protective timber, live oak, Spanish oak, cedar, and mesquite, and hundreds of clear water springs and dozens of creeks and streams. The Llanos themselves, the North, the South, and the main Llano. Here, great herds of cattle could be swallowed up and lost. Bold men could make fortunes in the light of the moon by the ambitious use of long ropes and fast horses, fanning out in all directions to take other men's cattle, other men's horses, and bringing them here to this favored land of strong grass and abundant water, far from law, far from the harsh hand of retribution. Riding the bay, leading a pack horse lent him by John Titus, Dundee took his time heading south and west into the Llano River country, carrying a generous amount of Titus grub in his pack and most of $200 in his pocket, less what the hotel had overcharged him. He saw no reason to be in a hurry. He doubted the cow thieves would leave before he got there. He took a long, leisurely look at the Titus cattle he came across. He decided they weren't different from most other people's. Some places, cowmen had brought in improved bulls, such as the imported Shorthorn, to start a gradual upgrading. Titus still held on to the pure Longhorn, the native Texas Mustang breed. The only visible step toward improvement was that he had steered all the male produce, except the ones he'd selected as best, and the ones he couldn't catch. The latter bequeathed a certain hardihood to their progeny, whatever shortcomings they might have had as beef. Some of the Titus bulls showed strong Mexican blood, and even went beyond that to the fighting strains that went back to ancient Spain. Most range cattle fought horsemen only when provoked. Twice Dundee found bulls coming to meet him halfway, pawing their challenge. He guessed Titus liked his cattle contrary, too. One thing he noted was the form of the Titus T-Bar brand, made with three stamps of a straight bar iron, the bar under the T. Every time Dundee sat a while on the ground, whether to eat, rest the horses, or just ease his tired rump, he would take a stick and draw the T-bar in the dirt. Then he would start improvising various ways it could be burned over with a running iron and converted into something else. He was amazed at the many variations. He could join the T to the bar and then cross a line through it and make a double E. He could run the upright through the top of the T and make a crossbar. He could make a double cross, a TE, a TF bar, a big I, a rocking R, and a JE. There was little limit other than a man's ingenuity, and Dundee had observed that when it came to thievery, many a dull man was transported into genius. John Titus must surely know his brand was easy to alter. Its lines were too simple. If he would use something complicated after the Mexican style, he'd present the hide burners a challenge. But this was probably a measure of the man's stubbornness. The brand was his. He would hang on to it come hell or high losses. The country became rougher and brushier the farther he went south. He never was sure when he passed beyond the boundaries of the Titus Ranch. Actually, he knew Titus didn't own more than a fraction of the land he used. What he had done, what a great many early Texas cowmen had done when the land showed signs of settling up, was to buy or lease all the land he could get that had natural water on it. The man who controlled the water thus controlled all the land within a cow's practical walking distance of it, for the land was valueless without water. A dry ranch up in the hills wasn't worth the shirt on a man's back. Dundee figured that a map of Titus's deeded land would be little more than a map of springs, creeks, and streams. It was legal enough and ingeniously simple. Dundee didn't begrudge him his holdings. He only regretted that he hadn't gotten here early enough to do the same thing himself. He found awesomely twisted gray-green live oaks edging the shell-studded limestone hills, and Mexican cedars growing in dense brakes, single cedars dotting the hills all the way to the rim rocks. There was often a tangly type of underbrush in the valleys, rustling with the wind and with the unseen movement of animals and rodents, and Lord knew what. Now and again, he'd catch a glimpse of a big rack of horns an instant before a white-tailed buck deer darted off into the protection of the heavy sumac and Spanish oak. Once in a while, he stirred up a few wild turkeys, which sprinted away like racehorses or flew up explosively like the bobwhite quail.
Good country for wild animals. No wonder it appeals to wild men.
The first scattered bunch of cattle he found in the roughs were standing around a half-dried waterhole in a rocky draw. He rode up on them quietly and with care. He managed to see the brands before the first old cow jerked her head up high, took one good look at him, and went clattering off of the thickets. The rest followed close behind her, their tails up, their dignity injured. Most of them carried what he took to be a rocker M, or maybe it was meant for a hat. Either way, it wasn't a conversion from the T-bar. However, Dundee saw one which looked suspicious. Best he could tell in the second or two he'd had a view, it was a box with a straight line down through it. That one could very easily have been made over from the Titus brand. He took a small tally book from his pocket and sketched the brand as he had seen it. He recorded the Rocker M, too, just for reference. As he went along, tallying every brand, he'd begin to find out who claimed each one. There would come a time, someday, for a reckoning. He spent long days quietly riding out the creeks and streams as he came across them, noting brands, jotting each new one in a book, sketching a rough map. During that time, he found at least half a dozen brands which could have been, and most probably were, the illegitimate offspring of the T-Bar. Somewhere he had read about the big fish living off the little ones. Here it looked more like the little ones living off the big. Dundee studiously avoided people. Now and again he'd see a picket cabin or a small rock house or even a tent pitched somewhere close to water, with perhaps a few brush corrals and a rude barn or two. These he observed at length and committed to map and memory, but he didn't go down for a talk. He found few cattle carrying the Titus brand. That, he thought, was a little odd. Even with Titus riders patrolling the outer edges of what Titus considered to be his rightful range, it seemed probable that on an outfit so large, some cattle would naturally stray out of bounds. It was to be expected. Seemed like the bigger the ranch, the farther the cattle wandered. Dundee figured they wandered all right, and probably a good many were encouraged to wander more than a little bit. Any strays which showed up this far from home likely didn't carry the T-Bar very long. One morning, moving the bay and the pack horse down a ridge, he heard cattle in the distance. He paused to listen. From the sound of it, he knew they were being driven. Dundee eased into the protection of a cedar motte and waited patiently. In due time, they came into sight. At a distance, he estimated 70 or 80 head. As they gradually came nearer, he counted about 50 cows and 25 or 30 calves. Dundee reached into his saddlebag and brought out a small spyglass that Titus had lent him. It was too far yet to read the brands and earmarks, so he studied the four riders. Best he could tell, the one in charge was a tall, heavy man in a Mexican sombrero. At least he seemed to be giving orders, what few were being given. These men knew their business without needing much instruction. It occurred to Dundee they were moving the cattle too fast, though. No bigger than this bunch was, if they would let the cows sit their own pace, the calves would keep up with their mammies and there wouldn't be all this bawling. A real cowman wouldn't push his own cattle this way except for a short distance. These had been walking a long time. They had a trail-drawn look about them. The riders were putting the cattle across a nice grassy flat, one of the best Dundee had seen this side of the T-Bar. Most of the cattle he had found in this region carried the Rocker M or the Hat or whatever it was. A little before sundown yesterday, Dundee had scouted what appeared to be the headquarters, on up about 3 or 4 miles beside a nice spring. He had sat on the brow of a hill and looked down with the spyglass for an hour or more, studying the layout. A double cabin there, built of logs, was better constructed than most he had seen. Whoever these people were, they had built with every intention of staying. He had seen a picket saddle shed and a set of corrals, part of them built of brush and some of stone, laboriously stacked. A couple of times he'd seen a woman. At the distance, he couldn't tell much about her. She was small, and by the ease of her movements, he guessed she was young. He hadn't seen any children. About sundown, two horsemen had come in from somewhere above, had unsaddled their horses and put the saddles in the shed. One man was a bit heavy and moved with the stiffness of age. The other had the movements of a young man and the energy. While the older of the two limped slowly to the cabin and flopped beneath a brush arbor to rest, the younger strode to a pile of rocks beside the corral and carried several to the fence he was building, setting them in place. He didn't stop until the woman came out and waved him to supper. About that time, Dundee had decided he was hungry too, so he pulled back a safe distance and made camp. He had thought about that stone fence some as he sat around his own campfire, chewing venison and sipping boiled coffee. Stone fences and laziness didn't go together. He noted that none of the riders pushing these cattle sat their horses like the two he had observed yesterday. Eventually, the small herd came close enough that, with the spyglass, he could read the brands. Most of the calves were still slick-eared, but the cows weren't. They belonged to Titus. Sitting there, Dundee tried again to study out a way the T-bar could be altered into the rocker M. It couldn't be done.
This don't add up. I reckon I'll just follow along.
As he was fixing to ride out from the Mott, he hauled up short. Three riders were coming from the south. Another minute and he would have been in their view. They came upon the trail of the cattle, paused a moment and followed the tracks. Dundee scratched his head, wondering. He decided to stay on the higher ground and see without being seen. Some games, it was better to watch than to play in. Presently, the three riders overtook the cattle. They howdied and shook with the drovers and sat their horses in a circle, taking time to smoke and parley. One man rode off. Before long, he came back, pointing. Across the big flat from the southwest, a rider pushed along in an easy trot. Dundee dismounted with a spyglass. He could recognize people sometimes by the way they sat their horses. He knew this was the man he'd observed yesterday working on the corral fence. The heavy man in the Mexican sombrero and two other men peeled away from the herd and rode to intercept the rider. Dundee could see angry gestures. At length, the man in the sombrero turned back and spoke to the other two, who sat a little behind him. The heavy man held a pistol. The two men dismounted slowly, deliberately, and walked to the fence builder's horse. One reached up and grabbed. The horseman slid out of the saddle, and they sprawled together in the dust. The two set in to beat him with their fists. Though it was two against one, the lone man put up a good fight of it for a while. Toting those rocks had put a good set of muscles on him, Dundee reasoned. One of the two who was beating him finally stretched out on the ground and didn't get up. The heavy man ordered fresh blood into the fray. The unequal contest raised a resentful anger in Dundee, and he considered going down there, but the odds were too long. There were too many guns. He reasoned that if they intended to kill the man, they would have done it at the start. Anyway, it wasn't any of his put in. The fence builder didn't have the chance of a one-legged pullet in a coyote den, but he resisted with all he had. Wearying, he swayed, staggered, swung without strength. Someone's fist hit him every time he opened up. He went down, pushed to his feet, went down again, came up as far as his knees, got struck in the jaw, and went down to stay. The man in the sombrero dismounted and delivered him a couple of hard kicks in the ribs. Gritting his teeth, Dundee held the spyglass on that man long enough to decide. He wasn't a Mexican, despite the hat.
You got something coming to you, Hoss. I hope I'm there when it's delivered.
The leader pointed back to the slowly scattering herd. The horseman grudgingly turned away from the downed fighter and trailed in a ragged line to the cattle. After a bit, they drove the cows and calves by the beaten man and on beyond him. Even in the shade, the close heat was oppressive here in the cedars, where the thin breeze couldn't move through the dense foliage. Dundee wondered about that man down yonder, sprawled on the ground in the open sun. Least they could do was drag him into the shade. His impulse was to go down and help, but he made himself wait until the cattle passed over a rise and out of view. The lone man heard him coming. He raised up onto his hands and knees, defiance in his eyes. He reached back to his hip, but they had thrown his pistol away into the grass. Dundee raised his hand as a sign of peace.
I don't mean you no harm.
The young man tried to push to his feet.
Wait and I'll help you. Go slow. If they busted anything, you don't want to lose the pieces.
The man swayed. His face was bloody and torn, his beribboned shirt crusted with dust and sweat. His hands were laced and bleeding.
I done a right smart job on you.
Where'd my horse go?
He run off. That's the way with horses.
Dundee hunted around till he found the pistol and returned it.
You gave him a good fight.
Who are you?
You wouldn't know me. Name's Dundee.
You saw that fight?
Had me a spyglass.
You didn't do nothing to help me?
I spent a lot of money across the poker table before I learned there's no use going against a stacked deck. Figured your health was lost anyway, and I'd keep mine so I could come down here and put the pieces back together.
Dundee jerked his thumb toward the bay.
Think you can get on my horse? I'll take you to the creek. You'll feel better once you wash the dirt and blood off.
Dundee had to help him into the saddle, and then swung up behind the candle and sat on the bay's hips.
I'd assume I'd have to keep calling you you. You got a name?
McCown. Warren McCown.
McCown. That would fit the Rocker M brand. Dundee squatted patiently on his heels and flipped rocks into the creek while McCown stripped off his clothes and waded into the water. He noted that McCown's face, neck, and hands were brown, but the rest of his body was white. Most early cowboys buttoned their collars and their sleeves. They believed it was cooler if you kept the sun out and the skin covered. McCown soaked till the dirt and blood were washed away.
Lord help the fish.
Now that he could see the cowboy's face plainer, he judged him to be in his late 20s. Presently, McCown came out and sat on the gravelly bank to let the wind dry him.
Feel better?
McCown only nodded.
Some of them marks didn't wash off. It'll carry him a spell.
McCown still only nodded.
You sore about me not coming down and throwing in with you?
You didn't know me.
Still don't.
And I don't know you. I do know that pack horse is carrying a T-Bar brand on him. You steal him?
Make any difference to you if I did?
I got worries enough of my own. Old Titus can watch out for himself.
Who were them jolly lads you was entertaining back there?
A while ago, you didn't want to get involved. You better just stay clear of it all around. What you don't know won't cause you no trouble.
McCown put on his hat first, then his long underwear, then his boots, his remnant of his shirt, and his trousers.
Mind letting me ride double with you up to my cabin? It ain't far.
I know where it is.
What?
I know more than you think I do. I know you got a log cabin and brush pens, and you're building yourself a set of rock corrals. I know you got an old man living with you, and a wife.
McCown's eyes narrowed, but he held his tongue.
What's more, I know you brand a Rocker M, and that there ain't no way to make a Rocker M out of a T-bar. I already tried.
Who the hell are you?
Told you. Name's Dundee.
A man can change names like he changes shirts. The name don't mean nothing.
I'm working for John Titus. I come to see what's been doing with his cattle.
And you've been watching me. Figuring me for a thief.
Not necessarily. Thought you might be.
And now you figure I'm not?
Not necessarily. Mount up. I'll ride behind.
I think I'd as soon walk as ride with the man who thinks I'm a thief.
I ain't said you are, and I ain't said you're not. I got a wide open mind. Now, if you want to ride home, you better get up on that horse.
They moved up the creek in an easy trot. McCown silently nursing his resentment, Dundee making no apology, and, indeed, not even considering the possibility that he should. To him, apology was a sign either of weakness or of being wrong, and he seldom conceded either. A mile or so from headquarters, he saw a rider approaching, leading a horse.
Hope this is a friend of yours, McCown.
It's Uncle Ollie. He's bringing my horse.
The elderly man slouched gracelessly in the saddle, taking his time. His face furrowed in concern, though worry didn't seem to enhance his speed.
Horse come in without you, Warren. Millie liked to have a fit. Look at you. I've been telling you this horse would throw you off.
It wasn't the horse, Uncle Ollie. It was... I run into some boys back yonder.
Uh-huh. Was old Blue Roan with them?
I didn't say it was Roan's bunch.
They marked you, boy. They surely did. They'll kill you if you don't watch out.
The old man turned his squinting attention to Dundee. His eyes light gray, set against a sun-darkened skin, wrinkled and dried like neglected leather.
Who might you be?
You can call him the Silent Observer.
The name's Dundee.
The old man reached out, his grip casual.
Mine's Ollie McCown.
To dismount without Dundee's having to get down first, McCown threw his right leg over the bay's neck and jumped to the ground.
I do thank you, Dundee, for what help you have been. Maybe I'll get to do the same for you sometime, if I'm real lucky.
McCown took the reins from his uncle's hands and swung up onto his own horse.
How come you to be home when my horse came in, Uncle Ollie? You supposed to be out rocking up that spring on the South Branch.
The old man shrugged like a kid caught at mischief.
Yeah, well, you know, I got tired and... Anyway, I thought it'd be nice to go down to the creek, catch a nice mess of fish for Millie to fix up for supper.
God, you and that fishing pole. I'd burn it, but you just fix another.
Dundee noticed Uncle Ollie looking with concern at the brand on the pack horse. Warren McCown saw it too.
Dundee works for John Titus. He's down here to find out where the Titus cattle are going.
You reckon people might think we're taking sides with them, Warren?
Let them.
Well, they done beat you up. The next time they might kill you.
This is my place, and I'll do as I please on it.
McCown turned to Dundee.
Since you're this close, you might as well come and have supper. I owe you that much for the ride.
Much obliged.
Dundee decided if he kept his mouth shut and his ears open, he might learn something. And even if he didn't learn anything, he'd get something in his belly besides old bacon and gamey venison and poor coffee and promises. If a man couldn't get rich, and Dundee doubted he ever would, the next best thing was to get fat. There was nothing elaborate about the McCown place, but this was not a country given to fancy things. Poor for pretty, but hell for stout. They passed the incomplete stone corrals, the piles of wagon-hauled rocks, which one day would find their place in the fences. The stones had been selected for size and shape up in the hills, more than likely, through long, hot days of backbreaking toil. McCown pointed to a finished rock corral in which stood the saddle shed.
You can put your horse in there and feed him. You likely want to be riding again come morning.
Dundee carried his saddle into the shed and set it across a rack that was simply a smoothed-off log placed atop a pair of posts. He noted that the shed's walls were upright cedar pickets, axe-hewn for a close fit, and set well into the ground to hold them solid. The roof was tightly built of live oak timbers, cedar, and sod. Somehow, Dundee thought McCown might have oats for his horses, but instead, the rancher dug into a barrel and came up with dried mesquite beans. Well, what they lacked in feed value, they made up in convenience. And they didn't cost anything. McCown paused at the gate and looked toward the unfinished rock fence.
I reckon I'll come back out here after supper and work till dark. It don't lack too much, finishing another pen.
After the beating you got, you better go to bed, Warren McCown.
A woman stood in the open dog run that separated the two sections of the cabin. Moving in that direction, walking to the right of the hobbling Uncle Ollie, Dundee found himself studying her. She was slender, he could tell that at a distance. Nearer, he could see that she was younger than he had thought, watching at a distance through the spyglass. Now he could see her long brown hair, strands of it lifting in the wind, strands that, when down to full length, must reach nearly to her waist. She had a thinnish, oval face, not yet sun-hardened, but still clean and soft. It was a natural face, one that probably had never known powder or rouge or any form of lip reddening like the town women sometimes used. The young woman, she might have been 20 or so, gasped at the sight of McCown's face.
Warren.
McCown gestured that it didn't amount to anything.
You about got supper ready? I want to do a little more work before it gets too late.
Uncle Ollie shrugged in futility. The woman turned to stare at Dundee in curiosity and perhaps a touch of fear. Dundee ran his hand over his face and realized his whiskers hadn't felt a razor since he'd left Titusville. Moreover, he was dusty and streaked with grime and wood smoke. To her, he must look like some robber chieftain, some brigand out of employ.
I know I appear fearsome, ma'am, but, I got a good heart.
And a good appetite, too, I expect. You'll just as well feed him some of Uncle Ollie's fish.
The woman glanced at Uncle Ollie and began to smile.
We had it made up that if Warren raised Cain about me fishing instead of working on that spring, we'd say it was Millie caught him.
Mrs. McCown, my name is Dundee.
I'm Millie McCown. And it's not Mrs., it's Miss.
You see, you don't know everything after all, Dundee. She's my sister, not my wife.
Dundee let it pass. A man was entitled to a small mistake now and again. For no reason he would have admitted to himself, he was somehow pleased to find she was unmarried. The kitchen was the biggest room in the double cabin. On one wall stood a black charter oak stove. At a time when most people in western Texas still cooked in an open fireplace, this was an uncommon luxury worth a dozen head of cattle or several fair to middling horses. A wood box beside it was heaped full with mesquite and oak wood, chopped to length. The fish was sizzling in a deep iron skillet. Millie McCown had set three chipped plates on a plain wooden table. Now, allowing for Dundee, she set a fourth. Waiting, Dundee looked around at the plain lumber shelves, the homemade rawhide and cedar chairs, the two cots that were to be Warren's and Uncle Ollie's. The place was built for utility. The stove was the only thing in it that would sell for three pieces of Mexican silver. On a shelf, Dundee saw an old tintype propped against a big family Bible. It pictured two soldiers in what appeared to be Confederate uniforms. One, he realized, was Uncle Ollie. This had been a good many years ago.
Yeah, that's me on the left. I was still full of vinegar them days. And I ain't changed much in my looks. Just the vinegar's just sort of run out.
Dundee glanced at the old man. If Ollie didn't think he'd changed, he hadn't stood close to a mirror lately.
That other fellow, that's my brother George, Daddy Millie and Warren. He's gone now. We buried him a long ways back.
Sorry.
Dundee approached the fish with some uncertainty. He'd been seeing them in the Clearwater streams and wished he could catch some. But he'd never lived in a part of the country where there were creeks to fish in. He didn't know how to start. Even if he had caught any, he wouldn't have known whether to skin them like a beef or eat them with the hide on. Dundee found himself looking at the girl through supper, cutting his eyes away when she glanced in his direction. He knew she was aware of his staring. For once, her face reddened a little. She'd been sheltered, this girl. After supper, Warren McCown did just what he said he would do. He went out and stacked rock for the fence, despite the soreness and despite his bruises. Dundee thought that he owed it to him to help, but McCown shook his head when Dundee picked up the first stone.
Wrong shape. Wrong size for the tie I'm making here. I could do it better myself.
Dundee dropped the rock and left McCown to handle the job all by his lonesome. He walked back down to the saddle shed, rubbing his beard and looking back at the cabin. He fished around in the pack for his razor and soap. He shaved in the cold water of the creek. Done with it, he asked himself why he'd gone to the trouble. He had no intentions to justify it. When a man courted a country girl like this Millie McCown, he had to have one thing in mind, marriage. Anything less would draw immediate rebuff from the girl and very possibly a belly full of buckshot from an outraged father or brother. Dundee knew marriage was not for him. His itchy feet hadn't been to the far side of all the hills yet. Temporary female companionship could be had in most any town if the urge got so strong a man had to give in to it. It could be bought and paid for. Then he could turn his back and ride away from her with no regrets, no sense of shirked responsibilities. He had no thought of despoiling this country girl, even if there were no penalty for it. This was a man's country. Good women as scarce as gold and as highly valued, to be treasured and protected from all that was thought dirty and raw and unpleasant. He subscribed to an old cowboy code that put a woman on a pedestal. She didn't leave it unless she deliberately stepped down. Unless a man had marriage in mind, he tipped his hat as the knights of old tipped their visors and held himself afar. Uncle Ollie had stayed long at the table. Now he was stretched on the ground beneath the arbor. The sun had gone down and there was no longer any need for shade. But Abbott is a slave master. Dundee joined him, sitting on the ground, crossing his legs. Ollie's eyes narrowed as he studied Dundee's shaven face.
Well, I don't expect you'd win no prize, but you do look a little better. You still got a dab of soap under your left ear.
Dundee wiped it off onto his sleeve. He pointed his chin toward the distant figure of Warren McCown working in the dusk.
Is he out of way all the time?
Oh, he expects a lot out of a man, but he drives himself most of all.
What's his hurry? Nobody gets out of this world alive.
Well, maybe it was seeing his old daddy die without a dollar in his pocket, hardly. This here place is Warren's, his and Millie's anyway. He's worked for it and he's fought for it, and it's like a fever with him. I ain't sure sometimes whether Warren owns the land or the land owns him.
Millie McCown walked out under the dog run, drying her hands on a cloth. Dundee pushed to his feet and took off his hat, bowing slightly, awkwardly. She smiled, and he sensed she was pleased he had taken time to shave. He noticed she had brushed her long hair. He wanted to pay her a compliment, but he didn't know what to say.
You don't have to get up for me, please. Be comfortable.
Dundee fetched her a rawhide chair from against the house. Then he stepped back beside Uncle Ollie and once more seated himself upon the ground. Dundee watched the girl until he knew she was nervously aware of his eyes. He looked away.
It's a nice cool evening after such a warm day.
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe it'll be the same again tomorrow.
I expect.
It was like this yesterday.
Yes, ma'am.
In the long silence that followed, Dundee could see Millie McCown's lips working a little. She was biting them, working up nerve to ask him something.
Mr. Dundee, I couldn't get Warren to tell me what happened to him. How he got so skinned up and bruised. Will you tell me?
Dundee hesitated. If McCown wanted her to know, he would have told her.
Please, Mr. Dundee.
The pleading tone of her voice melted him like butter. McCown ought to have told her.
I don't know who the man was, ma'am. They was driving a herd of cattle that sure as heck didn't belong to them. Your brother rode up and a fight started.
Maybe they were our cattle.
No, ma'am. They was carrying a T-bar, old John Titus's brand. I work for John Titus.
Oh, and you were trailing the cattle to see where they were being taken.
That's about it, ma'am.
And you helped my brother.
I ain't fixing to lie to you. I didn't get in the fight. But later I went down and done what I could.
If I know Warren, he didn't even think to thank you. So I thank you, Mr. Dundee.
No trouble, ma'am. I'd have done as much for a broken-legged dog.
He rubbed his neck. That hadn't come out the way he meant it. She seemed not to notice.
It was old Blue Roan or some of his men, I bet on that. Warren's had trouble with them. They keep bringing cattle across our land, cattle that don't belong to them.
Now, Millie.
We're minding our own business, or trying to. If Roan Hardesty steals cattle, that's between him and the law, or between him and the people he takes the cattle away from. But he's got no right to drive them across our land and draw us into it. One of these days, they'll come a reckoning. We don't want to be caught up in it.
Millie, you better hush up and not be making loose talk. That'll get us in trouble, too.
I'm just saying what's true.
You're saying it to a man who represents John Titus. There ain't no use having Roan and his crowd come over here some fine day and shut all of us up for good. They could do it, you know.
Warren can take care of us.
Oh, he ain't but one man. I'm only half a man. And you're no man at all. If it comes to a showdown, we will not last long.
Now, you wouldn't have to be alone. I think John Titus would help anybody who helps him.
What kind of help could we give him?
Dundee brought out his tally book.
I've been jotting down brands. I'd be much obliged if you'd tell me who claims them.
Dundee, I was in that war of northern aggression. I didn't own no slaves, wasn't none of my business, but I got in it anyway. All I got for it was a hole in my leg and some sense in my head. Yeah, I learned one thing. Take care of your own self. Stay out of a fight any way you can. Us McCowns are not messing into John Titus's trouble. We don't owe John Titus nothing.
If I tell him you helped me, he might figure he owes you something.
So might Blue Roan. Dundee, you go riding down into old Roan's backyard, and you may not ever see John Titus again.